Street, named after a Monsieur Philibert Papillon, a dead musician, I believe, where there was a cluster of whorehouses. It was always more cheerful hereabouts. There was the smell of cooking and wash hanging out to dry. Once in a while I caught a glimpse of the poor halfwits who lounged about inside. They were better off than the poor devils in the center of town, whom I used to bump into whenever I walked through a department store. I did that frequently in order to get warm. They were doing it for the same reason, I suppose. Looking for someone to buy them a coffee. They looked a little crazy with the cold and the loneliness. The whole town looked a bit crazy when the blue of evening settled over it. You could walk up and down the main drive any Thursday in the week till doomsday and never meet an expansive soul. 60 or 70,000 people, perhaps more, wrapped in woolen underwear and nowhere to go and nothing to do. Turning out mustard by the carload. Female orchestras grinding out the Merry Widow, silver service in the big hotels. The ducal palace rotting away, stone by stone, limb by limb, the trees screeching with frost, a ceaseless clatter of wooden shoes, the university celebrating the death of Goethe, or the birth, I don't remember which. Usually it's the deaths that are celebrated. Idiotic affair, anyway. Everybody yawning and stretching. Coming through the high driveway into the quadrangle, a sense of abysmal futility always came over me. Outside, bleak and empty. Inside, bleak and empty. A scummy sterility hanging over the town, a fog of book learning, slag and cinders of the past. Around the interior courts were ranged the classrooms, little shacks such as you might see in the North Woods where the pedagogues gave free rein to their voices. On the blackboard, the futile abracadabra, which the future citizens of the Republic would have to spend their lives forgetting. Once in a while, the parents were received in the big reception room just off the driveway, where there were busts of the heroes of antiquity, such as Molière, Racine, Corneille, Voltaire, etc., all the scarecrows whom the cabinet ministers mention with moist lips whenever an immortal is added to the waxworks. No bust of Villon, no bust of Rabelais, no bust of Rimbaud. Anyway, they met here in solemn conclave, the parents and the stuffed shirts whom the state hires to bend the minds of the young. Always this bending process, this landscape gardening to make the mind more attractive. And the youngsters came too, occasionally, the little sunflowers who would soon be transplanted from the nursery in order to decorate the municipal grass plots. Some of them were just rubber plants, easily dusted with a torn chemise. All of them jerking away for dear life in the dormitories as soon as night came on. The dormitories, where the red lights glowed, where the bell rang like a fire alarm, where the treads were hollowed out in the scramble to reach the educational cells. Then there were the profs. During the first few days, I got so far as to shake hands with a few of them, and of course there was always the salute with the hat when we passed under the arcades. But as for a heart-to-heart talk, as for walking to the corner and having a drink together, nothing doing. It was simply unimaginable. Most of them looked as though they had had the shit scared out of them. Anyway, I belonged to another hierarchy. They wouldn't even share a louse with the likes of me. They made me so damn irritated just to look at them that I used to curse them under my breath when I saw them coming. I used to stand there, leaning against a pillar, with a cigarette in the corner of my mouth and my hat down over my eyes, and when they got within hailing distance, I would let squirt a good gob and up with the hat. I didn't even bother to open my trap and bid them the time of day. Under my breath, I simply said, "Fuck you, Jack," and let it go at that. After a week, it seemed as if I had been here all my life. It was like a bloody fucking nightmare that you can't throw off. Used to fall into a coma thinking about it. Just a few days ago I had arrived, nightfall, people scurrying home like rats under the foggy lights, the trees glittering with diamond-pointed malice. I thought it all out, 1,000 times or more. From the station to the lycée, it was like a promenade through the Danzig corridor, all deckle-edged, crannied, nerve-ridden. A lane of dead bones, of crooked, cringing figures buried in shrouds, spines made of sardine bones, The Lycée itself seemed to rise up out of a lake of thin snow, an inverted mountain that pointed down toward the center of the earth where God or the devil works always in a straitjacket, grinding grist for that paradise which is always a wet dream. If the sun ever shone, I don't remember it. I remember nothing but the cold, greasy fogs that blew in from the frozen marshes over yonder where the railroad tracks burrowed into the lurid hills. Down near the station was a canal, or perhaps it was a river, hidden away under a yellow sky, with little shacks pasted slap up against the rising ledge of the banks. There was a barracks, too, somewhere, it struck me, because every now and then I met little yellow men from Cochin China. Squirmy, opium-faced runts peeping out of their baggy uniforms like dyed skeletons packed in excelsior. The whole goddamned medievalism of the place was infernally ticklish and restive, rocking back and forth with low moans, jumping out at you from the eaves, hanging like broken-necked criminals from the gargoyles. I kept looking back all the time, kept walking like a crab that you prong with a dirty fork. All those fat little monsters, those slab-like effigies pasted on the façade of the Église Saint-Michel, they were following me, down the crooked lanes and around corners. The whole façade of Saint-Michel seemed to open up like an album at night, leaving you face to face with the horrors of the printed page. When the lights went out, and the characters faded away flat, dead as words, then it was quite magnificent, the façade. In every crevice of the old, gnarled front, there was the hollow chant of the night wind, and over the lacy rubble of cold, stiff vestments, there was a cloudy, absinthe-like drool of fog and frost. Here, where the church stood, everything seemed turned hindside front. The church itself must have been twisted off its base by centuries of progress in the rain and snow. It lay in the Place Edgar Quinet, squat against the wind, like a dead mule. Through the Rue de la Monnaie, the wind rushed like white hair, streaming wild. It whirled around the white hitching posts, which obstructed the free passage of omnibuses and 20 mule teams. Swinging through this exit in the early morning hours, I sometimes stumbled upon Monsieur Renaud, who, wrapped in his cowl like a gluttonous monk, made overtures to me in the language of the 16th century. Falling in step with Monsieur Renaud, the moon busting through the greasy sky like a punctured balloon, I fell immediately into the realm of the transcendental. Monsieur Renaud had a precise speech, dry as apricots, with a heavy Brandenburger bass. Used to come at me full tilt from Goethe or Fichte, with deep bass notes that rumbled in the windy corners of the place like claps of last year's thunder. Men of Yucatan, men of Zanzibar, men of Tierra del Fuego, save me from this glaucous hog rind. The north piles up about me, the glacial fjords, the blue-tipped spines, the crazy lights, the obscene Christian chant that spread like an avalanche from Etna to the Aegean. Everything frozen tight as scum, the mind locked and rhymed with frost, and through the melancholy bales of Chitterwit, the choking gargle of louse-eaten saints. White I am, and wrapped in wool, swaddled, fettered, hamstrung, but in this I have no part. White to the bone, but with a cold alkali base, with saffron-tipped fingers. White, aye, but no brother of learning, no Catholic heart. White and ruthless as the men before me who sailed out of the Elba. I look to the sea, to the sky, to what is unintelligible and distantly near. The snow underfoot scurries before the wind, blows, tickles, stings, lisps away, whirls aloft, showers, splinters, sprays down. No sun, no roar of surf, no breakers surge, the cold north wind pointed with barbed shafts, icy, malevolent, greedy, blighting, paralyzing. The streets turn away on their crooked elbows, they break from the hurried sight, the stern glance. They hobble away down the drifting latticework, wheeling the church hindside front, mowing down the statues, flattening the monuments, uprooting the trees, stiffening the grass, sucking the fragrance out of the earth, leaves dull as cement, leaves no dew can bring to glisten again. No moon will ever silver their listless plight. The seasons are come to a stagnant stop, the trees blench and wither, the wagons roll in the mica ruts with slithering harp-like thuds. In the hollow of the white-tipped hills, lurid and boneless Dijon slumbers. No man alive and walking through the night except the restless spirits moving southward toward the sapphire grids, yet I am up and about, a walking ghost, a white man terrorized by the cold sanity of this slaughterhouse geometry. Who am I? What am I doing here? I fall between the cold walls of human malevolence, a white figure fluttering, sinking down through the cold lake, a mountain of skulls above me. I settle down to the cold latitudes, the chalk steps washed with indigo. The earth in its dark corridors knows my step, feels a foot abroad, a wing stirring, a gasp and a shudder. I hear the learning chaffed and chiseled, the figures mounting upward, bat slime dripping aloft and clanging with pasteboard golden wings. I hear the trains collide, the chains rattle, the locomotive chugging, snorting, sniffing, steaming and pissing. All things come to me through the clear fog with the odor of repetition, with yellow hangovers and gadzooks and wedekins. In the dead center, far below Dijon, far below the hyperborean regions, stands God Ajax, his shoulders strapped to the mill wheel, the olives crunching, the green marsh water alive with croaking frogs. The fog and snow, the cold latitude, the heavy learning, the blue coffee, the unbuttered bread, the soup and lentils, the heavy pork packer beans, the stale cheese, the soggy chow, the lousy wine have put the whole penitentiary into a state of constipation. And just when everyone has become shit-tight, the toilet pipes freeze. The shit piles up like anthills. One has to move down from the little pedestals and leave it on the floor. It lies there, stiff and frozen, waiting for the thaw. On Thursdays, the hunchback comes with his little wheelbarrow, shovels the cold, stiff turds with a broom and pan, and trundles off, dragging his withered leg. The corridors are littered with toilet paper. It sticks to your feet like flypaper. When the weather moderates, the odor gets ripe. You can smell it in Winchester, 40 miles away. Standing over that ripe dung in the morning with a toothbrush, the stench is so powerful that it makes your head spin. We stand around in red flannel shirts, waiting to spit down the hole. It is like an aria from one of Verdi's great operas, an anvil chorus with pulleys and syringes. In the night, when I am taken short, I rush down to the private toilet of Monsieur le Censeur, just off the driveway. My stool is always full of blood. His toilet doesn't flush either, but at least there is the pleasure of sitting down. I leave my little bundle for him as a token of esteem. Toward the end of the meal each evening, the veilleur de nuit drops in for his bit of cheer. This is the only human being in the whole institution with whom I feel a kinship. He is a nobody. He carries a lantern and a bunch of keys. He makes the rounds through the night, stiff as an automaton. About the time the stale cheese is being passed around, in he pops for his glass of wine. He stands there, with paw outstretched, his hair stiff and wiry like a mastiff's, his cheeks ruddy, his mustache gleaming with snow. He mumbles a word or two, and Quasimodo brings him the bottle. Then, with feet solidly planted, he throws back his head, and down it goes, slowly, in one long draft. To me, it's like he's pouring rubies down his gullet. Something about this gesture which seizes me by the hair, it's almost as if he were drinking down the dregs of human sympathy, as if all the love and compassion in the world could be tossed off like that, in one gulp, as if that were all that could be squeezed together, day after day. A little less than a rabbit, they have made him. In the scheme of things, he's not worth the brine to pickle a herring. He's just a piece of live manure, and he knows it. When he looks around after his drink and smiles at us, the world seems to be falling to pieces. It's a smile thrown across an abyss. The whole stinking civilized world lies like a quagmire at the bottom of the pit, and over it, like a mirage, hovers this wavering smile. It was the same smile which greeted me at night when I returned from my rambles. I remember one such night when, standing at the door waiting for the old fellow to finish his rounds, I had such a sense of well-being that I could have waited thus forever. I had to wait perhaps half an hour before he opened the door. I looked about me calmly and leisurely, drank everything in, the dead tree in front of the school with its twisted rope branches, the houses across the street which had changed color during the night, which curved now more noticeably, the sound of a train rolling through the Siberian wastes, the railings painted by Utrillo, the sky, the deep wagon ruts. Suddenly, out of nowhere, two lovers appeared. Every few yards they stopped and embraced, and when I could no longer follow them with my eyes, I followed the sound of their steps, heard the abrupt stop, and then the slow, meandering gait. I could feel the sag and slump of their bodies when they leaned against a rail, heard their shoes creak as the muscles tightened for the embrace. Through the town they wandered, through the crooked streets, toward the glassy canal where the water lay black as coal. There was something phenomenal about it. In all Dijon, not two like them. Meanwhile, the old fellow was making the rounds. I could hear the jingle of his keys, the crunching of his boots, the steady, automatic tread. Finally, I heard him coming through the driveway to open the big door, a monstrous, arched portal without a moat in front of it. I heard him fumbling at the lock, his hands stiff, his mind numbed. As the door swung open, I saw over his head a brilliant constellation crowning the chapel. Every door was locked, every cell bolted. The books were closed. The night hung close, dagger-pointed, drunk as a maniac. There it was, the infinitude of emptiness. Over the chapel, like a bishop's mitre, hung the constellation every night during the winter months. It hung there, low over the chapel. Low and bright, a handful of dagger points, a dazzle of pure emptiness. The old fellow followed me to the turn of the drive, the door closed silently. As I bade him good night, I caught that desperate, hopeless smile again, like a meteoric flash over the rim of a lost world. And again I saw him standing in the refectory, his head thrown back and the rubies pouring down his gullet. The whole Mediterranean seemed to be buried inside him, the orange groves, the cypress trees, the winged statues, the wooden temples, the blue sea, the stiff masks, the mystic numbers, the mythological birds, the sapphire skies, the eaglets, the sunny coves, the blind bards, the bearded heroes. Gone, all that. Sunk beneath the avalanche from the north, buried, dead forever. A memory. A wild hope. For just a moment I linger at the carriageway, the shroud, the pall, the unspeakable, clutching emptiness of it all. Then I walk quickly along the gravel path near the wall, past the arches and columns, the iron staircases, from one quadrangle to the other. Everything is locked tight, locked for the winter. I find the arcade leading to the dormitory. A sickish light spills down over the stairs from the grimy, frosted windows. Everywhere the paint is peeling off. The stones are hollowed out. The banister creaks. A damp sweat oozes from the flagging and forms a pale, fuzzy aura pierced by the feeble red light at the head of the stairs. I mount the last flight, the turret, in a sweat and terror. In pitch darkness, I grope my way through the deserted corridor, every room empty, locked, molding away. My hand slides along the wall seeking the keyhole. A panic comes over me as I grasp the doorknob, always a hand at my collar ready to yank me back. Once inside the room, I bolt the door. It's a miracle which I perform each night, the miracle of getting inside without being strangled, without being struck down by an axe. I can hear the rats scurrying through the corridor, gnawing away over my head between the thick rafters. The light glares like burning sulfur, and there is the sweet, sickish stench of a room which is never ventilated. In the corner stands the coal box, just as I left it. The fire is out. A silence so intense that it sounds like Niagara Falls in my ears. Alone. With a tremendous empty longing and dread. The whole room for my thoughts. Nothing but myself and what I think, what I fear. could think the most fantastic thoughts, could dance, spit, grimace, curse, wail. Nobody would ever know. Nobody would ever hear. The thought of such absolute privacy is enough to drive me mad. It's like a clean birth, everything cut away, separate, naked, alone. Bliss and agony simultaneously, time on your hands, each second weighing on you like a mountain.